Thank you, Kate, for that information. And for continuity's sake, we're going to carry straight on with Murray Horton. Murray will be known to you as a long-time peace researcher, editor, and producer of Watchdog in Christchurch. Murray.
Good afternoon. Firstly, thank you to Perm for inviting me here today. Definitely cost more than getting Nicky, I'm afraid. Okay, but never mind. It's good to see a good, strong Christchurch contingent here. No matter where I go, I can't get away from Kate and Rob, actually. But one night last month, we actually spent a rather memorable night together, locked up together in a cell block in Paparoa Prison, but that's another story.
It's another story.
So it's always nice to come back to my birthplace. I gather my father used to work in that building in the days when Wellington had about 500,000 public servants, plus one person to punch the tickets at the railway station as they came through in the morning. Okay, I work for CAFCA, Campaign Against Foreign Control of Aotearoa, and the Anti-Bases campaign, both based in Christchurch. Bought some material that's on the table out there. The CAFCA one's a lovely gold colour, the ABC stuff is the politically correct green one. Right, we're going to talk today about, the title is Big Brother's Big Ears, New Zealand's role in the American war machine. I'm talking about big ears, of course. I know where Noddy is. Noddy's in the White House. But I think also I'd like to take the opportunity before starting of saying a few words about Iraq, because that is the issue of the moment. I'm sorry that I missed the march today. I think we need to speak some plain words here. Let's not have merely bloody words about regrettable precedents and unfortunate and that. What is happening in Iraq is good old-fashioned imperialism, which, as a certain person said, is the highest stage of capitalism. Let's not speak sort of bullshit about what these people are. They are thieves, they are armed robbers, they are mass murderers. They deserve the same fate as those who stood trial at the Nuremberg bloody tribunal in 1946. And I personally can't think of a better fate than bloody Bush and Saddam Hussein to be locked up in a cell together forever. The bastards deserve each other. Although one's got a better choice than moustache. Okay, I'm going to concentrate on the ABC stuff. There are three installations we're talking about. When we talk about New Zealand's contribution to the American war machine, we look at the sort of stuff that's going on now in Afghanistan and Iraq. We have a few SAS guys in Afghanistan running around in top secret. Only Nicky Hagan knows what they're doing, apparently. And then Sunday Star Times, the Defence Department doesn't know what they're doing. We have a frigate that's stopping bloody fishing boats and has got nothing to do with Iraq, floating around over there and being towed by the Australians. Basically, they're irrelevant. Okay, what New Zealand's biggest contribution to the American war is the Waihopai spy base. Right, situated very, very close to the city. This is actually the biggest main centre near to Waihopai. Unfortunately, I must castigate Wellingtonians. We had a demonstration there in January and nobody whatsoever came from Wellington. So please do better next time. This is actually the closest bloody city to the Waihopai spy base. So if the Scud missiles come in, they'll be exploding nearer to you than they will be to me. And if you saw the news yesterday, you'll see that the government has now mobilised Air Force cadets and Air Force personnel from RNZAF base Woodburn, Blenheim Airport, to guard the Waihopai spy base against terrorist attacks as of yesterday. All right. So if the terrorists, if they attack, they'll attack closer to here than they will to... Yes, that's us. Okay. So, essentially, the reasons why Waihopai does not operate in the interests of New Zealand or our neighbours, it is not effectively accountable to Parliament or the people of New Zealand, it is exempt from the key provisions of the Privacy Act and the Crimes Act, to all intents and purposes, it is a foreign spy base working for and providing raw intelligence directly to the US. It's paid for by New Zealand, us, the taxpayers, it's staffed by New Zealanders, etc., but it might as well fly the stars and stripes over it. Waihopai intercepts and records your international phone calls and email. Waihopai is a waste and blatant misuse of taxpayers' money. What does it actually do? The electronic intelligence gathering base is located in the Waihopai Valley near Blenheim. First announced by the lamentable David Longie in 1987, it is operated by New Zealand's Government Communications Security Bureau, or GCSB, in the interests of the foreign powers, grouped together in the super-secret UK-USA agreement, which shares global electronic and signals intelligence among the intelligence agencies of the US, the UK, Canada, Australia and New Zealand, dates back to 47-48. In exactly the same way that the Security Council reflects the victors of the Second World War, so does the UK-USA agreement. Much more important than ANZUS or anything like that. Waihopai's two satellite interception dishes are shielded by giant domes, hence the big ears. In fact, they're big balls. They're the biggest balls in Marlborough. And the wine grower who puts us up when we camp there for the demos, Ollie, actually has just launched a rather splendid vintage wine called Big Balls, which was on the front page of the Marlborough Express not long ago, and that sold rather nicely, actually quite a nice red. So if you want to see the biggest balls in Marlborough, you fly from here to Christchurch, you look down. They're so big there's aircraft warning lights on top of them. You can see them from 35,000 feet. Okay, so it's two satellite interception dishes shielded by giant domes intercept a huge volume of satellite phone calls, including New Zealand's international calls, plus telexes, faxes, email and computer data communications. It gathers this data from our Asia-Pacific neighbours, the sort of Southwest Pacific, and forwards it onto the major partners in the UK-USA agreement, specifically the United States National Security Agency, the world's biggest intelligence agency, far bigger than the CIA. 1988, I actually attended a recruiting session in Australia for the DSD, the Defence Signals Directorate, at Melbourne University, and they wanted to recruit young graduates, and we sat there with a tape recorder hidden in a bag, which went click very noisily halfway through the lecture. And there were two perks offered by the recruiter. There was an old bloke and a young woman in a miniskirt. And the two perks were you got to play at the, so you could join the St Kilda Squash Club, and the second one was you could use the world's biggest computer. He said, we can't tell you where it is, but it might be in America. In Fort Meade, Maryland. Okay. The code name for this is Echelon has become notorious worldwide. New Zealand is an integral, albeit junior, part of a global spying network, one that is ultimately accountable only to its own constituency agencies, not governments, and certainly not citizens. How does Waihopai involve us in America's wars? Waihopai's big ears cover a vast area of the Pacific. Although Iraq is on the other side of the world, the US military intelligence network that is planning this war, that is carrying out this war, is global and depends on global facilities. Waihopai is strategically situated in the Pacific for spying on several countries, such as Indonesia, that do not support US war plans or the so-called war on terror. If New Zealanders disagree with US policies and warmongering, Waihopai is located right here to monitor our own international emails and phone calls and report directly to Big Brother at our expense, because we pay for Waihopai with millions of our tax dollars every year. The Bush administration has pronounced intelligence to be the key component of all the wars that it is fighting or planning to fight throughout the world, and what's next on the agenda? Iran, North Korea, possibly New Zealand, France possibly. Thus, much more so than any token commitment of the SAS or a frigate, the Waihopai spy base is New Zealand's key contribution to all these American wars. Just to put it a little bit into context, there are there's one sister station on the other side of Australia, Geraldton, Codgerina, that monitors the Indian Ocean sort of thing. There's another one up the top of Australia that peers into sort of Indonesia, etc. It was revealed last year that they in fact had taped all the conversations between the Indonesian chain of command and the death squad leaders in Timor, saying let's go and murder all these bastards if they vote for independence, and they chose the Australians not to make that public at the time. That actually was leaked later. They were also from those stations tapping all the communications between the Australian mainland and the captain of the Tampa when the Australians stormed that ship. That was also leaked last year. That was the first ever public confirmation anywhere in the Echelon chain that internal communications of a member country were being tapped. And John Howard said at Parliament it was an inadvertent scooping up of information. Of course this happens, he said. The line they give you here, when you ask them, do you tap New Zealanders' conversations, they say, no. But if you say, well, what do you do about what's called the New Zealand leg of a conversation? If you ring up your uncle Saddam in Baghdad and say, how's it going today? They will say, well, we don't answer that question. We're only interested in foreign communications. And that they will not answer questions about what they do with the so-called New Zealand leg of those communications. So Waihopai does not operate in the national interests of New Zealand or our neighbours. Basically, it is a foreign spy base on New Zealand soil and directly involves us in America's wars. Waihopai must be closed. That's very briefly. The second spy base is actually your one. It's closer to Wellington, which is Tangi Moana, an older one. Waihopai dates back to 87, announced in 87, first dome up in 89, second dome 98. Tangi Moana dates back 20 years to the days of Muldoon. It's a radio communication interception facility located 150 kilometres north of Wellington and Sandhill Country on the west coast of the North Island. This, from our website, is just basically taken straight out of Nicky Hager's Secret Power, which is the definitive book on the subject, 1996. The sophisticated antennae are designed to pick up high-frequency or short-wave radio signals from ships, aircraft and land-based transmitters around the Pacific. It's used for things like targeting French military communications, targeting shipping, It points out, Nicky's book points out, that it actually monitored the French terrorists who sank the Rainbow Warrior. Now, the interception occurred in mid-July 85 as they sailed away from New Zealand on the yacht Uvia. Their radio messages were translated by GCSB personnel, but this was only after the police had already identified the yacht and it was too late to catch them. I mean, that basically points out the usefulness of these spy bases. People say, well, we need them to defend ourselves. Well, what use were they when terrorists came to this country and actually murdered somebody in Auckland Harbour? Another major area targeted by Tangi Moana is communications between and within South Pacific nations and their communications with the rest of the world. And this includes a wide range of political, economic and military communications, from political telexes in Melanesia to Fiji army communications to Tongan patrol boats communicating with their headquarters. There is even some monitoring of private ham radio operators in the South Pacific if they are in a position to know about subjects of interest, for example, internal conflict within a Pacific island nation. However, by the mid-1990s, most of the non-military South Pacific communications have been replaced by satellite and are therefore spied on by Waihopai. The actual linguists who are needed to sort of translate all this stuff are recruited from Canterbury University. The government community, just like Treasury, is recruited from Canterbury University, which might account for why Canterbury University is on reputation as a rather conservative university. But yes, the GCSB regularly interviews at Canterbury for Pacific language specialists. To work out of an interesting building in Wellington and with possible postings to Blenheim or Horowhenua. So, yes, that's what they're looking for. The Americans subcontract all this sort of stuff out because they wouldn't even know where Samoa is, for example, let alone how to speak the language. Since the second half of the 1980s, computer technology has dramatically altered the operations at Tangi Moana. The station's dictionary computer and the internal station computer network are now central to its work. One of the staff asked the interviewer, Nicky Hager, quote, "You do realise that Tangi Moana and Waihopai collect for the other agencies." This comment partly refers to special requests where Tangi Moana may have better reception than other stations in the network or is doing special interception work for another agency. Mainly, though, it refers to the regular interception sharing coordinated within the Echelon Global Intelligence System of the US National Security Agency. And the Tangi Moana collection schedule, i.e. schedule of whom to spy on, and when, optimises collections for the whole network, and the dictionary computer automatically sends raw intercepts to the overseas agencies according to their keyword specifications. Just to explain that briefly, Echelon operates on the keyword basis that you might say Saddam, submarine, Scud missile, whatever. These computers, I mean the world's biggest computer at Fort Meade, Maryland, NSA headquarters, basically just goes through, scans all those words and picks out one or two. I mean, the perfect example was when they were, select committee was hearing submissions on one of the various bills that the government's put through in the last couple of years, the Swain bill, I think, the what's it called, the Crimes Amendment Bill, something or other, Supplementary Order Paper Number 86. A student turned up from Victoria University who had been contacted by the FBI because she had sent a message to a friend in America that had mentioned in the same message the word president and funeral. That she had to go to a funeral, and she couldn't come to the States, and there was some mention of the president, and so this combination of words was picked up on this call or email and zoomed to the States, and she was contacted in New Zealand by American authorities to say, why had she sent this message? This combination of words had cropped up. Some of you may have heard Mike Frost, the guy that the ABC toured through New Zealand in 01, a month after September the 11th, and he gave examples. Yes, I know Mike's politics were rather interesting to say the least. We had some fun with him. But he sort of gave examples of a mother sort of describing her son's play at school, really bombing, on a phone call. And that would go onto a file, because the word bomb. And if possibly that same number, that same woman, used the word again the second time, then a file might be opened. Because this is somebody using the word bomb. Frost also gave the example in an Australian documentary of the Canadian intelligence for whom he worked, the CSE, actually intercepting the car phone of the American ambassador in Ottawa, and from that getting the price that the Americans were going to offer the Chinese for a wheat contract, and then relaying that back to the Canadian government, undercutting the Americans. So that's basically what the sort of spying is used for. Not so much on terrorists. Frost said actually terrorism was basically never discussed. He worked 34 years as a spy for the Canadians. Among other people he spied on was Pierre Trudeau's wife, to find out if he was running around with Mick Jagger and smoking dope. He also was involved in spying on dissident cabinet ministers and Thatcher's government, because the British government and British intelligence wanted plausible deniability, that is, so that they could then stand up in Parliament and somebody said, is it true that MI5 was spying on Minister so-and-so? They could say, no, it wasn't, because they flew the Canadians over and actually operated out of the Canadian High Commission in London, tapping the phones, etc., and spying on the communications of these British cabinet ministers. So those were the sort of people that Frost was involved in spying on. He said terrorism basically didn't really mention. Economic stuff and internal sort of dissidents. The agency that runs these two stations, there's a third one, which we'll talk to, which is separate, is the Government Communications Security Bureau, which operates out of Freiburg House here in Wellington. Those of you who read The Listener will have seen Nikki's article in The Latest Listener entitled Spies Like Us, pointing out the role of floors 12 and 14 of the Freiburg House in spying on the United Nations. I mean, you will have seen the stuff in the papers in the last week or so about how the Americans have been caught spying on member nations, member governments, member delegations of the UN Security Council to find out who was going to go which way. And Nikki's article points out that this should come as no surprise to New Zealanders, because we are doing it here as a matter of routine, and that when he was researching his book, that, for example, he had spoken to... I have spoken to GCSB staff whose daily job was scrolling through the intercepted communications of UN agencies based in Suva, forwarding them to the NSA, CIA and other allied intelligence agencies. That's right, they routinely spy on the UN. Other staff routinely view all the South Pacific countries' private diplomatic messages on UN meetings, GATT negotiations, bilateral trade relations with the US and other private business, again dispatching it all to the NSA. Our intelligence agency is helping, quote, give US policymakers an edge in obtaining results favourable to US goals, unquote, which is the wording from the memo that was leaked to the media, at the expense of countries and international organisations we supposedly support. Staff say the potential threats such as terrorism, feature in the work programs. So that's in this week's Listener. So that's among the tasks carried out by the Government Communications Security Bureau, which runs both Waihopo and Tangi Moana. New Zealand being a wonderfully small country, the place that I normally stay in up in Kilburn. My mate there is the former brother-in-law of the director of the GCSB, whose name is Warren Tucker. So I've actually had the pleasure of discussing Dad's work with both his daughter and his son. His son said that he wanted to be a spy when he grew up and left school, and I said, why is that? And he said, oh, Dad said it's a good job. And he said, oh, I shouldn't have said that. He told me not to tell people things like that. Yes. And the daughter would routinely refer to sort of when we were living in Washington with Dad, etc. So Warren and I recently had a correspondence in the press on sort of whether or not Waihopo is actually an American base. The ABC's policy on the Government Communications Security Bureau is that it should be disestablished or abolished forthwith. We made a submission, in fact, in the last week or so, the government has been debating the final stages of the GCSB bill. Our policy is quite simply that both Waihopo and Tangi Moana should be closed down, and that the GCSB and all its ties to overseas intelligence agencies should be terminated. We support our position. I'll just read a couple of paragraphs from our submission, dated June 2901. The GCSB is a party to the UK-USA agreement, making it an intimate intelligence partner with sibling agencies in the US, Britain, Canada and Australia. The intelligence links among these agencies are automated, giving New Zealand no control over the use of the intercepts produced in this country. When Nikki Hager and John Campbell got into Waihopo in 1996, for, what was it, 60 minutes or whatever TV3 had then, and actually filmed through the window because the spies couldn't pull the curtains properly closed at night, there was like looking at the deck of Starship Enterprise, because there was nobody there. It was just completely automated twinkling lights on computer screens, etc. And that said, there was absolutely nobody there. There was no analysts going over the stuff. It just went straight from Waihopo up to here and then, boom, off to the States, etc. Oversight of our intelligence agencies is a facade. With the best of intentions, no government committee and no inspector general could possibly oversee the inner workings of New Zealand's intelligence agencies. We have a, what's it called, Intelligence and Security Committee. It's not a select committee, it's not a committee of parliament, it's a committee of government. And we have an inspector general. And I mean, those of us who live near Riccarton will know that when our mates in the Security Intelligence Service were caught breaking into the home of our colleague Aziz Chaudhry, the Inspector General of Intelligence and Security put in writing that, quote, nothing unlawful occurred that night. And when Aziz actually won his court case, it was ruled that since 1969, New Zealand intelligence had no right whatsoever to break into anyone's house, the Inspector General replied in writing and said, I was working on the assumptions of the law as I saw it. But what he actually said was nothing unlawful occurred that night. So that was the proper channels. That's the oversight. At the moment, my colleague Bob Leonard and I have both complained in writing about the way the GCSB affects us. He said he would entertain a well-considered, rational complaint. So I'm still waiting to hear. I put mine on about a year ago. Bob's had his rejected. Now, the third installation, or base actually, is Christchurch Airport. Demilitarise Harewood. The American war in Iraq and Afghanistan or anywhere else is no further away than Christchurch Airport, popularly known as Harewood. How come? Because the US maintains a military base there and has done so for nearly 50 years. It is not a nuclear base or a combat base, and the article that you quoted in this morning's Dominion Post is actually also in this morning's press, except it's illustrated by a photograph of Moana Cole holding an ABC banner next to this bloody crap by, what's his name, Gareth Morgan. Yes. It's one of a chain of US military bases right around the Asia-Pacific region. Harewood is a medium-level multi-purpose military transport base. All year round is a vital cog in the machine that services the massive US spy bases in Australia, especially the key one of Pine Gap near Alice Springs, which has been described as the intelligence vacuum cleaner of the skies. Pine Gap played a major role and has played a major role in every recent US war you can name. When Ronald Reagan tried to kill Libya's leader, Colonel Gaddafi, in 1986, succeeding only in killing one of his kids, Pine Gap provided the targeting information to the American warplanes. Pine Gap was heavily involved in the Gulf War and the various 1990s wars in the former Yugoslavia. It will be currently selecting targets to be bombed in Iraq. So the American military occupation of Christchurch International Airport, or Harewood, has its roots in the 1950s. The Scientific International Geophysical Year, 1957-58, brought military air and logistics supports in the form of the US Navy and Air Force. The Navy left Christchurch in 1998, but the Air Force continues its military and intelligence support operations to this day. The American military operates under the cover of the Antarctic Agreement of 1961. Both overt and covert military and intelligence support operations that have little or no relationship to Antarctic science or logistics, Operation Deep Freeze, have gone on for years both in Christchurch and in Antarctica. The New Zealand government has never questioned the scope of US military activities at Christchurch, the only Australasian city to host a foreign base within its bounds. There's not one in Sydney, there's not one in Melbourne, there's not one in Auckland, there's not one in Wellington, but there's one in Christchurch, and it's been there since 1955. The US government regards the US area at the airport as sovereign US territory and not subject to New Zealand law. New Zealanders in the employ of the US military engaged in Antarctic logistics have long been denied the option of belonging to a trade union in their own country. Customs and agriculture officials may not set foot on any American military aircraft. They too are sovereign US territory under international law. And we were given literally rubbish bags full of original documents from within Deep Freeze back in the 80s that pointed out that when there was an argument over this very sovereignty issue under the Muldoon government, the Americans issued instructions that if New Zealand officials set foot on those planes at Christchurch Airport, they were to fly away immediately, if necessary, with their doors open and land at the nearest airport at the nearest friendly country, rather than to submit to a customs or agriculture inspection under New Zealand law, because they're called sovereign instrumentalities. They are the flying equivalent of the Thornton Embassy. Military research in the Southern Hemisphere and in the Antarctic was frequently supported from Operation Deep Freeze in violation of the spirit, if not the letter, of the Antarctic Treaty. The US Air Force Air Mobility Command supports Antarctic operations in the southern summer, but its large Starlifter and Galaxy cargo aircraft also supply vital US military and intelligence bases in Australia, Pine Gap and Narunga, the latter is closing or shifting, year-round, with several flights a month through Christchurch. This has gone on since the early 1960s, with the planes covered by the American neither confirm nor deny nuclear weapons policy, the same policy that saw US Navy ships banned by law from New Zealand since 1987. Those flights are specifically exempt from New Zealand's nuclear-free law. So New Zealand is not a nuclear-free country. Those planes in and out of Christchurch Airport are specifically written out of, and we got an exceptionally abusive letter from David Longy when he was Prime Minister, reinforcing that point. So Christchurch, which has recently declared itself a peace city, is neither a peace city nor nuclear free, nor is New Zealand a nuclear free country, when planes, American military aircraft are coming in and out of Christchurch Airport under exactly the same policy that led to their warships being banned. The New Zealand government gives these aircraft annual blanket clearance for unlimited flights and no questions asked, and they don't even pay any landing fees. That's all paid for by you, the New Zealand taxpayer, and Christchurch ratepayer. Despite New Zealand having been expelled from ANZUS since the 1980s, and I'll finish in a minute, and supposedly frozen out of a direct military relationship with the US because of our nuclear-free stance, there has never been the slightest suggestion from the US of it relocating or closing its Harewood base. Why? Because it values having a medium-level, multi-purpose US military transport base in New Zealand. Harewood has always been the only actual US military base in New Zealand, as opposed to specialist installations such as Mount John, Black Birch, etc. The US values having a sovereign base here, and it has served as host for all manner of US military and political figures for decades to the very highest level of the American government, from CIA Director Richard Helms in the 1970s to US President Bill Clinton in 1999, they've all come to Harewood. Clinton did not come to the capital of New Zealand on his state visit in 1999. Why? Because Wellington Airport can't take jumbo jets, and Air Force One couldn't touch down. So Air Force One flew to Christchurch, where they unloaded some of the 1,200 staff that travelled with the American president. We watched the planes unload with buses filling up. And Clinton also went as commander-in-chief to the only American military base in this country to address his soldiers, which is where he spoke. His one public address in Christchurch was at the Antarctic Centre. So three demands: close the Waihopo spy base, close the Tangimoana spy base, get rid of the GCSB, and demilitarise Harewood.